What is up, y'all? Will here at Schedulefly. This was quite an interesting episode. It was a different story than we get most of the times. I mean, most of the times when I ask people, you know, for their origin story with hospitality, it's, you know, hey, I was washing dishes, started at 13, and then, you know, been at it for 30 years. Nelson Ruiz has owned Mucho Gusto in Bel Air, Maryland for, I think they've been open 3 years now. He came from corporate America and has a really cool backstory. He was traveling around and said, you know, literally over his 20 or 30 years in corporate America had probably eaten 1,000 restaurants. You know, flew all around the country, went to different cities all over the U.S., all over the world, and had visited so many restaurants. And over the time, you know, began to collect ideas of what he'd like to do with his own place one day. And sure enough, he made it happen. And I'm just so impressed with this story. Most people that leave corporate America, you know, to get into something like hospitality are going to go buy a franchise. It's a much easier transition, or at least it is deemed as an easier transition. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But the idea of not having to come up with your own idea and just, you know, originate everything, but just take a concept and take the playbook and execute on the playbook. Well, Nelson came up with his own concept, and he's got an incredible one. And they're already growing. And I'll let you hear from him what's happening. But it's an amazing story. This is a must-listen episode. Super dude, very sharp, has his ducks in a row. It just gets it, man. Like, you can just tell this thing's going to do really well. It's very clear to me talking to him that that's going to be the case. So enjoy this episode. But before you do, enjoy a quick word from our sponsor and our Schedulefly partner, Pop Menu. Pop Menu is all about making your day easier and your sales bigger. They will simplify your marketing operations, bring in more guests, and capture customer data for personalized remarketing to keep them coming back. With one super simple to use platform that integrates with most point of sales like Toast and Square and a number of others, Pop Menu starts with a beautifully designed, easy to update interactive menu that transforms the guest experience online. It includes a brand new website that's optimized for search engines like Google for no additional cost, automated digital marketing, online ordering and waitlisting, and you'll never miss another call with their AI answering solution that costs as little as 47 cents an hour. And there's just so much more in there. So there's a link to Pop Menu in the show notes. We have a lot of mutual customers with Schedulefly and Pop Menu. When I speak to those folks, consistently they tell me great product, great company, great customer service, great results. Check them out. And check out this episode, Nelson Ruiz, Mucho Gusto, Bel Air, Maryland. Great dude, great story. More episodes coming soon. See ya.
How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm great. Nelson, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm heading down to the basement. I'm going to go over here. Okay, my golden retriever sometimes likes to get involved in meetings and all that. So
we love dogs, man. That's okay. I've got three dogs myself. They're sometimes around here, so no worries.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Nelson, thank you for taking the time to do this today, my friend.
Oh, hey, no problem. No problem. It worked out pretty good. Having a busy week, but this is probably about the best time to do this week. So it worked out fine.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll dive right in there. I want to respect your time. So do me a favor and just introduce yourself real quick.
Yeah, Nelson Ruiz from Baltimore, Maryland, owner of Mucho Gusto, which is a Latin Mexican restaurant based in Bel Air, Maryland.
How long have you been in hospitality, Nelson?
It's been going on, we're going to be 3 years. 3 years. Now, that does not include when I was a server way back in the day when I was in college and stuff like that. So did the usual thing as a college student, waiting tables and working in restaurants, got involved in the corporate world for many, many, many years, which then led to what I'm doing now.
Oh, now this is really cool. I'm excited to hear this because so many of the people that we have on here, you know, it was like, hey, I started washing dishes when I was 14. And then, you know, and it's been like this whole career in hospitality. So you came from the corporate world. So this is fascinating, man. So, well, congrats, first of all.
Thanks. Thank you.
getting out from under that and starting your own restaurant, and 3 years in, that means you started at a pretty challenging time as well, I guess.
Oh yeah. You know, we did definitely did not have COVID in our business plan. So, and actually when we were slated to open, if you remember, that's when they shut everything down for 6 weeks. You couldn't even go out of your house. If you remember those first 6 weeks, no one could do anything.
Yep.
And then at some point they allowed restaurants to do takeout only. So still nothing inside, but takeout only, at least in Maryland. And because of the type of restaurant that we are, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit, we just didn't feel the best way to introduce ourselves to a market was via takeout. So we waited another 6 months until we were at 50% capacity. When it became 50% capacity, you can open up and at 50% capacity inside your restaurant. So that's when we decided to open up. That and the fact that we were going to run out of money at some point, because we were at that point paying, you know, salaries, you know, to managers and chefs and paying on a lease and all that fun stuff. So it worked out fine. A little scary, a little hairy. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that have some similar stories to tell. But I think it was the right decision because we're more than just, you know, food. So people kind of needed to get the experience. And I think we delivered on that.
Wow, man, that's awesome. Well, so what were you doing prior to this, and what led you to decide to open Mucho Gusto?
Yeah, well, you know, I started out in nursing and then got into, you know, pharma and medical device sales and leadership. I did that for about 20 years before, you know, getting into this. And fortunately, you know, as a leader in the pharmaceutical industry, I did lots of traveling all over the country. Anything from, you know, hotel bars and restaurants to full service restaurants to casual restaurants to the, you know, the restaurant across the street, to the trendiest restaurants to the most expensive restaurants, you know, Chicago, San Antonio, LA, San Diego, Miami, Vegas, all over. And it was always very interesting and appealing to me. And I always said to myself, you know, someday I think I want to do this. I think I would love to do this. And a lot of times I was with my sales teams or the leadership team. Sometimes I was by myself. So I started to see things that I liked, things that, you know, I think could be better, you know, things that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and never knowing if one day I'd actually do it, but wanted to do that. And at some point I just made a decision. It was time to move on. And, you know, I for 20 years been telling my people to believe in themselves and, you know, motivate them and inspire them to hit their sales goals, even when they think they couldn't hit them. And finally looked in the mirror and said, you know, I should start doing what I've been telling everybody else to do for the last 20 years. And I sat down with my wife and in all honesty, all candor, I thought she was going to say no. And there might've been a small part of me that maybe was hoping she was going to say no, because it's risky and it's scary.
Yeah, and that could be your out. Right. I got you.
Yeah. But she said, yeah. So here we are. And it's, it, you know, knock on wood, it could not have gone any better. I mean, we couldn't have written a better script. Thankfully, it's been one heck of a ride. So it's been great.
Well, and so this is your concept.
Yes. So this is 100% mine. And this is, again, built on just, as I mentioned before, you know, with all the restaurants, and I, when I tell you that I've probably been to 1,000 restaurants in 20 years, I'm not exaggerating, because we've spent a lot of time going out with customers and with our employees. And, you know, the way that I kind of built this concept, it had to do with, you know, some kind of old cliche kind of saying that you've heard before. You know, people may forget what you say, they may forget what you do, but they certainly remember how you make them feel. And if you go back to, you know, when we opened the restaurant, certainly with the pandemic and, you know, the political environment and the divisiveness in the country and, you know, just, you know, moms and dads running their kids to, you know, they get up in the morning, they got to make breakfast for the kids, then they got to go to work, then they got to make dinner, then they got to get the kids to practice, people are running around and sometimes not even finding time to eat. We thought, and I, you know, that a restaurant could be so much more than just food, you know, and we live, which obviously is very important, right? The food has to be good. But when you think about this generation, and one of the things that I saw in restaurants, which was a little different than when I was a restaurant, when I was much younger, is just the diversity in restaurants, as far as a customer base, is very different than it was 20 years ago. You know, certain restaurants would attract certain customers, and you could walk into a restaurant and, you know, sitting at this table now is somebody that you can tell is in their 40s or 50s. They've had a, you know, good career, but then sitting right next to them is the 21-year-old boy taking out his girlfriend. Obviously, he doesn't have the same budget that the other table has. You know, you have a generation that loves to take pictures, loves photo opportunities, loves to show people where they are, where they've been, where they want to go. So I feel it's a big miss for a restaurant not to have decor that entices people, that brings people in and makes them feel like they're part of something and makes them want to take a picture to tell everyone that they've been there. And that's really the concept of the restaurant. It's really about the experience. You know, we have great food. People love our cocktails. That's what kind of probably what we're known for. But people also tell us we're one of the most Instagrammable restaurants they've ever been to, which is very nice. And it's free marketing for us because they all take the same pictures in the same spot and thousands of people see that every week. So
what is it about the decor that makes it so Instagrammable?
Let me just back up. Coming from New York, I'm originally from New York, where local really means nothing to people because people are from all over the place.
Yeah.
When you come to Maryland, local, there's a lot of pride in local. You know, being local, there's a lot of pride in it. So we hired a local interior designer to build the restaurant. We hired local artists, both professionals and students from high schools and colleges to paint certain things for us inside the restaurant to make it resonate for the people that are in our market. Yeah. And then the other thing that, you know, that we did is I took a little bit of everything that I saw in various, you know, parts of the country. You know, for instance, I was at a whiskey bar in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I was sitting at the bar and I looked up and they had these lights that, you know, come right over your head. And I'm looking at the lights and I'm like, those look like whiskey bottles that they literally cut off and made lights out of them. So I said, you know, I'm going to do that with tequila bottles. So really, when you walk in the restaurant, there's a little bit of something from somewhere in the country inside the restaurant. And everything was touched by a local artist. So our chandeliers are painted by a local artist. You know, we have old art. Our local artists came in and they painted the mural in our patio, which people, you know, talk about a lot and take pictures in front of. The big mural that you see when you walk in the restaurant was painted by a local artist. And then, of course, our lounge, which is where the sign is, where everybody takes their picture. That, again, was, you know, let's create an Instagrammable moment. Let's create a place where in a selfie generation, people are going to be drawn to take a selfie. Mm-hmm. And you got a lot going on in our restaurant.
Smart, man. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, dude, this is, I mean, you're the first person I think that I've met that left the corporate world to go into hospitality with their own concept. There's plenty of people that do it where they say, okay, because that's a big, I mean, you took a big risk and a big leap of faith. I commend you so much for doing that. Especially having, you know, that tenure in the corporate world. I mean, it's easy to kind of just stay in that rhythm and stay in that routine. And here you are listening to yourself preach to your, the folks that report to you. And then you're saying, okay, I should do this. And then most people I think would go, okay, what's a franchise I can go buy? Like, you know, somebody's already got the concept. I just need to come in and execute, you know, and that works well a lot of times because when you've been in the corporate world, you learn a lot of the processes and management styles and all this stuff you need to just execute on something else. You came up with your own concept and pulled the trigger on that, man. That's like, dude, I mean, I have so much respect for you. I really do. I think that's an amazing thing. I think that's it's just a very inspiring story. So I just can't tip my hat enough that you went out and to your bride for supporting you in doing that.
Yeah, sure, she's crazy. Yeah. And now she's in on it too. You know, she's left her career and she's doing this with me now. So it's crazy. Yeah. It's funny you say that because when I was figuring out what my next move was going to be, I looked at franchises and I actually got really close to Jersey Mike's. And okay. I knew they were going to kill Subway. You know, I just knew it. This is going back 5 years ago. And I'm like, you know, they're so much better than Subway. And I shouldn't say that. They're just the next evolution, I think, of Subway. And I really felt like, you know, I think these guys are gonna take over that segment of the business, and they certainly are doing it. It just wasn't, you know, for what I could make with one store and compared to what I was, you know, used to bringing in, it just, I would have needed a large number of stores to get things going for me. And that would have been a little too risky. And I really wanted to do my own thing, you know, and as different as, you know, you spoke to something that's really important, you know, having a corporate background, you know, you understand procedures, management, you know, expectations, standards, and all that stuff very well. But I was surprised, honestly, at the similarities between the two industries. So I was in an industry where for the last 10 years, we went through an incredible amount of change.
Yeah,
a lot of change. And I would be in a situation where I'd come to work on a Monday and I had a new sales team, I had new products, and I had a new market. And I then had to learn all those things as quickly as possible, right? So when you have new things, there's things you know, and there's things you don't know. And a lot of times people in that situation will make, you know, not necessarily mistakes, but two things that can hinder, you know, good performance. You know, they tend to stay in their comfort zone. They stay with what they know, and they don't do anything to address the things that they don't know. And I think those things really helped me, not knowing at the time that eventually I would get into this industry, that those skills would really help me, because getting into this industry, I knew what I didn't know. So I found people that know how to do that. So that was really important to me. And my first internet search, I'm not kidding you, was how big should a restaurant be in square footage? That was my first internet search. And then my second internet search was what square footage should the kitchen be, and what square footage should be revenue generating? Those are my first two questions that I asked. And then I started to, you know, get a lot of information and say, all right, I can learn this. I can apply my skills to this. These things I don't know, I'm going to find people that know how to do that better than me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to look yourself in the mirror and know what you don't know and realize that sometimes you can learn it. But other times, if it's critical things, that may be the best course of action is to find somebody that knows how to do that better than you and get them on the team. And that's what we did.
Yeah, the ultimate confidence is checking your ego and finding other people, like knowing things that you're not good at and maybe don't want to try to be good at, and finding somebody that is a master at that and bringing them in. And then you learn from them. But that's again, this is something that's so common with folks that have been successful in this business is understanding, okay, I've got to just put my ego aside. Because there's a lot of ego in this industry. There has been. I mean, a lot of, you know, there's artistic folks that are particularly the chef driven places. Nothing wrong with that, man. It's a good thing to have a healthy ego. But a lot of times that prohibits you. It keeps you from, you know, allowing others to come in and add to what you're doing. So recognizing that's a really important quality for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit it on the nose. And, you know, when I did some research to find out, you know, why do restaurants fail? Because unfortunately, a lot of them do. You know, and then as I learned, as I'm looking for investors, you know, one of the first things that financial advisors will tell people, don't invest in restaurants, right? You know, so, and for good reason. And really what I found is, you know, to your point, that's very true. And the other thing that stood out to me is, you know, you have people that have such great qualities, you know, they have all this passion, they have strong work ethic, they believe in their concept and what they're going to do, but they don't necessarily fully understand or appreciate how to take that and operationalize it and make it profitable. And yes, they run into issues because of that. And I think that's where the corporate background, you know, helped me. So I found restaurant people that knew margins, you know, knew what the kitchen numbers should look like, and knew what inventory should look like, and had them help me. Like, this is my concept, this is what I want. And you've kind of lived and breathed it for years, you know, make it happen for me type of thing.
For sure. For sure. Well, yeah, I again, starting this when you did, amazing. So you had a business plan. It obviously changed from COVID. Now we're kind of back full speed ahead. So you all are clicking on all cylinders. Is growth part of your plan, or, you know, I know it's still early on, but do you imagine having multiple locations one day, or
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. It's good timing. So yesterday we announced on social media that we plan on opening two additional locations in the state of Maryland by the end of this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we're really excited about that. We're teasing people. We're not even telling them where they are yet. We'll probably tell them the cities in a couple of weeks, and then we'll give them exact locations in a couple of months. We feel comfortable enough that we're long enough in the process where it's just an item here or an item there before the lease is signed. So we're done. We're pretty much done at this point. So we're ready to move forward on those places. So we see potentially 3 to 5 locations in Maryland, and then we'd like to go to Tampa. My wife and I love the Gulf side of Florida. We've gone there a lot. Our consultant chefs that we now have with us are based out of Tampa. There's a concept that they have that we feel that we could work together in a parallel kind of fashion. So we're going to look to do that. Once we get these other two locations up and running, we'll start to, we're already looking for a location in Tampa. Just haven't really found anything quite yet. But once these other two locations are up and running in Maryland, we're going to start to really focus hard on Tampa while still looking for two additional locations in Maryland. Growth is important.
Consultant chefs in Tampa. Who do you work with?
We work with the chef and the baker. They're very popular down there. They're on the news every day down there. They're pretty much the chefs that the news down there uses to help show you how to make things. And they both actually were on TV. They're celebrity chefs. They beat Bobby Flay in the contest. They both beat him. So Bobby Flay finished in third. They finished first and second. Great people. Nice people. What I wanted was the best Latin chefs I could find. As a consultant, you know, looking for the most current, trendiest, kind of unique foods that are out there, foods that have lots of different flavors and ingredients in them. And I put an ad in Indeed and I got a zillion responses. And these are the people that I landed on. And it's been a great relationship ever since. So we're looking forward to partnering with them more as we move forward. We're going to be when we open up our next two locations in Maryland, we'll be introducing tapas to the menu as well, and some specialty tacos, which we just rolled out yesterday in our store that we do have in Maryland. So we have not only plans for growth in terms of number of store units, but continue to grow and evolve the menu as well.
Do you own your property or are you leasing?
We lease. As of now, all the properties that we're looking at and the one that we currently have, we lease.
Anything important you've learned about lease negotiations?
Yeah, definitely have a good broker that can represent you, and make sure, though it's a little painful because the lawyers are very expensive, to make sure that they go over your lease, with a fine comb, tooth and nail, to make sure that your best interest is being considered in the lease. There's always going to have to be compromise. You're not going to get everything you want. But if you don't have people to represent you, to back you, you got to be careful. Now, I feel good about our lease. I probably could have gotten a little bit more TI, tenant improvement, had I taken my own advice, earlier. So we definitely did that, differently this time around. We were able at the last minute before we signed that lease to get other people involved to help us out that ended up, financially helping us out significantly based on some of the things that they had to, take out of lease or give back to us. So I would just tell people, I know when you're starting a business and there's no revenue coming in, that money can be very tight. And, sometimes you don't want to give people money to help you because it's more money out of your pocket. But when you're signing a lease, could be 5 or 10 years of your life, and it comes with guarantees of 3 years or 1 year, whatever it is. Plus, if you're signing loans or whatever you're doing for funding, it probably makes sense to have somebody that really understands that kind of stuff sit you down and saying, "This is in your best interest. This isn't. Let's get this out of the lease. Let's get this reworded." And that actually just happened with the place, one of the locations that we're going to sign the lease for. We almost had to walk away. And finally, the lawyer said, if you don't just take this out completely, there's no deal. And they ended up taking it out. And I never would have saw that. I'm not a lawyer. A lawyer can explain something to me 10 times and it still doesn't make sense. So sometimes it makes, you know, it's good advice, but even if it's maybe a little painful financially at first to pay experts to represent you. So especially when you're putting your name on something that you're going to be held accountable to for years.
It's an investment. The cost is a line item. It's measurable. You know what you spent. The savings is potentially endless of, you know, what they may have saved you should things go awry or whatever. Like that's what they do. So you're investing into protection for the business for the long term, so that you don't run into a situation where, you know, you shortchange it early on and then you wind up having to lose your business because you, you know, had something in there that was. So yeah, a great perspective. But it is hard early on. You got all of this money coming out of pocket and you said you got investors.
Yeah, I have one in particular that stayed with us and will be investing in the other one. And we have another one that's jumping on board here too. So
yeah.
So we have investors, bank loans, you know, business loans, just the combination of all for the funding.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay, good. Good to have as few investors as possible, I suppose, just because people are people and you never know what changes over time. And having, you know, one thing I've heard a lot of people say is, I'm curious if you went through this process of narrowing down and making sure philosophically you and the investor were on the same page. And, you know, in other words, like you can sometimes find investors that are looking for somewhere to invest money and you just want the money and you just, you know, boom, you just, hey, here's somebody. But if you don't get the right person that really is aligned philosophically and has the same time frame and everything in mind, that can come back. And I've talked to restaurant owners that have been through this before where that can come back to bite you down the road as well.
Yeah. And a lot of it depends on what type of investor they are, you know, and, you know, angel investors may want, you know, 20% return. Venture capitalists may want 40% return, part ownership. They're going to want say in the restaurant or whatever business they're, you know, wanting to get involved with. So, and usually the more money that somebody's willing to give you, the more either ownership or say they want, you know, in as part of that return. So you really have to consider where you're getting your funding from. So fortunately for us, our major investor, our top investor is a silent investor. It's strictly that an investment, doesn't want any say, doesn't want to know what's going on. Of course, he wants to see the P&Ls and the numbers and all that. Not interested in giving us advice or criticism, just wants to see his investment make money. And that's a nice place to be. And I'm not saying that every investor would be that way, but that's nice. But usually the rule of thumb, if there's a general rule of thumb, the more money they give you, the more they're going to either want in return or ownership or say they're going to want. And that's where you've got to make that decision, you know, as an owner for any business, you know, how much are you willing to give up?
Yep.
And that's hard, you know, when it's your baby and it's your idea and it's your concept, you don't want to give any of it up, right? It's yours. But unless you have all the dollars you need to make it happen, if you're not willing to give up a little something, you may never get to what you want.
That's right.
You have to make that decision as to, you know, maybe I will give up this piece or this amount, because this will get us to where I want to go. But it's hard. It's a hard journey. It was hard for me. I just talked to somebody a couple of months ago, the same situation, and he doesn't want to give it up. He doesn't want to give it up. And he's still stuck in the same spot. It's tough. It's a tough thing when you have your baby and you have to give a little bit of it up to get something. But I would just tell people that if it's the right person, it's the right move at the right time. You may end up better than you think because of it.
Yeah, I would say down the road, most likely you'll be glad, because that's pulling that lever early on and not having that hill to climb constantly is kind of frees you up to execute on what you want to do with your plan, with your baby. Speaking of that, one more thing I want to ask you. I want to respect your time, but I want to ask you, because you mentioned this is your baby, right? And this, so I always find this dynamic really interesting, Nelson, which is how, like, we're lucky. We've got five of us here. We've had five people in this business for a long time. It's the same five people, you know, and it's a small group, and we're all like really invested in the success of this business. Okay. I always find it fascinating when people own a business particularly a restaurant where people come and go so often, where this is your baby. And the way you approach a customer and take care of a customer, the way you approach vendors, the way, and you know, the relationships you build are so critically important, and they, and the why is so important to you because it is your baby. I'm curious about your approach to trying to find people that, I mean, nobody's going to care as much as you and your wife are, but there are people that really will, you know, invest heavily into trying to help grow this baby into something amazing and having a part of it and feeling proud of that. How do you find those kinds of people to participate in your growth?
A couple of ways, and that's a great question. And I the way that I find those people is with the future and tomorrow in mind. So we know that we want to grow. So we've just hired recently a vice president of operations and a director of operations, and they came from a regional growing restaurant hospitality group that has for the last, you know, 5 years been opening multiple restaurants. And these people have been responsible for hiring, training managers, regional managers, district managers, kitchen managers. You know, they've been in charge of actually, you know, once a location is picked, working with the contractors, the architect for permitting. Those are things we're going to need to do as we grow. So I actually got these two people from one of those hospitality groups, because they've been there, done that with what we're trying to do moving forward. The other thing I did, after, you know, knowing these people now for a few years in the industry, is I also gave them some sweat equity. So they have some skin in the game. They're going to become part owners. Good. So they want this as bad as I do. And, you know, for our management, for our other managers that were hiring and that we already have, I think one of the things that I'm most proud of, because you don't see this a lot in our industry, unless it's, you know, the chain restaurants or the big regional groups, is for all of our full-time employees, we offer full medical, dental, vision, and retirement benefits.
That's incredible.
So that comes at a pretty significant cost. But we want to not only tell our employees, but show our employees that we are dedicated to them as long as they are dedicated to us, and that we are looking for the best and people that want to challenge themselves to be held to the highest standard. Now, I realize maybe that not every restaurant owner, you know, can do that. But that was very important for us. So we set ourselves up to financially be able, you know, to do that. And that's so that's how we feel we've been able to find the people that, that we want, that can, you know, treat it like their baby. Well, for two of our mid-level, people in our company, it is part their baby now. They do have skin in the game. They do have a future ahead of them. And now that we've started to build some layers of leadership, now our frontline managers that are, you know, restaurant managers see that there is a ladder that they can climb. And they've been offered something in terms of benefits that they haven't gotten, you know, anywhere else, unless they're at a national chain or something. So that makes them want to stay, and it makes them want to grow. And then we also, just last week, we are doing development programs for our managers to develop them, how to be managers, how to lead, you know, the staff, how to deal with customer issues. So they feel that we're invested in their development and growth, you know, professionally as well. So we think, you know, looking at our people in that manner, when they see that we're invested in them and putting training and resources and money behind it, that in return, they're going to see the value that we bring to them, and they're going to want to give us their best.
An owner told me years ago, attract the top talent and the customers will follow. And that always stuck with me. I think that's such a great way to do it. You're investing heavily on the front end in folks, but when you're providing these benefits, you're giving them, you know, skin in the game. That's how you get great people, and great people are going to take great care of your guests, and the customers are going to, you know, how do they make you feel? I mean, you said that, you know, you remember that. So,
spot on. Mm-hmm.
Dude, this is awesome. I mean, again, congrats. I utmost respect, man, for what you've done, for taking that risk, and making that leap. Hard for people to do. I'm super excited to follow what y'all are doing. And maybe we'll do this again, you know, later in the year or early part of next year, once you've got some other locations. Man, you got a lot of energy coming out of you that's so positive and engaging, Nelson. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I'm super thrilled to have the opportunity. Thank you, man.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it. You know, I still learn every day. I'm learning. So it's always great to connect with people and learn. And even some of the questions you ask, you know, make me think. So I appreciate that. And I enjoyed it. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my man. Have a good one. Tell your team hello from all of us at Schedulefly. Thank you for the business. And we'll stay in touch, man.
All right. Thanks a bunch. You have a good rest of the day. All right.
All right. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.